Welcome to Who Knew? We are fans of the current series of Doctor Who, and here we discuss our likes, dislikes, and insights into the modern regeneration of the show. Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher, or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast. All our episodes are on WhoKnewPodcast.com. You can leave comments there, or email us at WhoKnewPodcast@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram and Twitter account. Tweet at us at WhoKnewPodcast, and find us on Facebook. Today's episode is episode 1 of season 6, The Impossible Astronaut. Amy, Rory, and River are shocked as they see the Doctor killed along the shore of Lake Silencio. This episode is written by Stephen Moffat, directed by Toby Haynes. It originally aired on the 23rd of April, 2011, and was watched by 6.52 million viewers. Hi, this is Eugene. Let's introduce ourselves.
This is Brian.
Hey, this is Kelsey.
Hello, this is Auburn.
Hi, this is Frank.
Hey guys, it's Heather.
In the 17th century, the Doctor is found hiding beneath a lady's skirt by the king and is imprisoned in the Tower of London. Amy is reading this story to Rory from a history book, adding that a mysterious sphere floated away with this unnamed Doctor a few days later. She is searching for all historic stories of him, no matter how ridiculous. She believes that he's trying to get their attention. A letter arrives in a TARDIS blue envelope numbered 3, with date, time, and location coordinates. Locked in her prison cell, River receives an identical letter with number 2, and announces that she is packing to go to America. The coordinates lead Amy and Rory to the southwest of America, where they meet the Doctor, now wearing a Stetson instead of a fez. River appears and expertly shoots the hat off his head. The four of them go to a diner, and River and the Doctor sync up their time diaries. The Doctor tells them that he's been running faster than ever and needs them to go with him to 1969.
I thought this opening was too quick, too chaotic. People were talking too fast, and even the sound effects and music, there's that swooshing sound. It just was a cacophony of what is going on? It gets you in there, but it just seemed a little bit too much, too rushed.
Oh, wow. I love this opening. I think this is the best start of a new season besides Crime and Punishment. Wait.
Which one?
Which one? Who's in it?
Describe.
Season 4.
Partners in Crime.
Partners in crime. Thank you.
I can play this game.
Yeah.
Okay. Next.
So I think this is the best start of a new season. Obviously, my favorite episode, first episode of a season is Crime and Punishment.
Partners.
No,
Partners in Crime.
Oh my goodness. But is that a season opener? It's not.
Mm-hmm. It's a book.
Hmm? No, Partners in Crime. Is Partners in Crime a season
yes,
opener?
Yes, it is.
Or is...
It is. Season 4.
Okay, that is... Okay. Anyway, I'm just going to say this is the best start of a new season. I love that all our companions are separated. They're not with the Doctor, and he has to go and has to assemble them together. You know, Amy and Rory are at home. River's in prison. The Doctor is just going off and having his own fun adventures.
With Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah. I love it. And yeah, I find that I was able to keep up with what was happening, and it was more fun than chaotic for me.
I agree with both of you, because when Frank said that, I was like, yes, I agree with the editing, but I do enjoy how it brings us up to speed with, like, a new viewer can watch this and go, this is what the show's about. This reminded me of an early theory I had with, I guess, the 10th Doctor, and how he was trying to get the attention of his first companion, Susan, because she was, she left to get married in the near future. And so I thought that this was similar to the theory that I had, that the Doctor became sort of more public instead of kind of like a Superman character where he saves the day but then flies off, not being there to kind of be thanked or congratulated for doing the saving.
Like Martha said.
Yeah.
He saved the world so many times and nobody knows.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, this thing where Amy's just reading off the adventures and books and being like, I think he's trying to get our attention. It just reminded me of that theory I had way back when.
Mm.
And it's been about 2 months for Amy and Rory since they were with the Doctor.
Do you know how long it's been for the television audience?
That's a Eugene question.
That's Christmas Carol was the last time we saw an episode. We had like a season.
Okay. Yeah, I like that Amy and Rory seemed to continue their life while the Doctor continued their adventures.
Which is really something different that we really haven't seen before of a break. They're on a break. Mm-hmm. You know, just where they can go back to their normal lives. that's something that we didn't see with the other companions, which is nice to see, because then we do see it later on with Clara and some others. So it's like, here's where we started that scene, going, no, you don't have to be with him the whole time while still traveling with him, you know, when he shows up. Watching the episode, I liked it. But then when you're trying to surmise the episode and do all that, wait a minute, what are they saying? What did they say? Is there something important that you're supposed to listen to? Is it something that, you know, will be coming up in the future? How do I write this? Okay. So that was like, this really is just done quickly, and it's a little bit too chaotic.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster that when you start to analyze, basically don't think about it too much. Right. So let's have an hour and a half podcast on it.
I just agree with Frank. My first page of notes was all the cold open. And then afterwards, we slowed back down to like the normal pace right. of the story. But yeah, it's great to get all that exposition, all the characters that we're going to see. They already meet up before we even get to the main title. So it's I like the cold open.
Well, also reminds me of what we say, like the adventures that don't happen or mm-hmm. that we don't see that happen. They're planning to have that day at the beach type of thing. I'm like, hey, we're going to go do that. Or they have done that, you know, like they have the house and they're living their lives. I think it was on the commentary that they mentioned that there are little knickknacks and things decorated, like set design. Like there's a statue of some sort of Roman. So there's like little thing nods to things like that. So check it out.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, it's funny. I forget that we actually haven't seen Amy and Rory in a house together, like in their house. Because when we did in last season, it was a dream. It wasn't real. Mm. And now like this is actually their house. This is them actually living their lives for 3 months without the doctor, or 2 months, as Frank said.
Well, they had their day at the beach at Lake Silencio, where the doctor tells them that it's been about 200 years since they last saw him. On a hill, Amy sees a figure, but quickly forgets when she looks away. A stranger drives up and exchanges ways with the doctor. River sees an astronaut walk out of the lake, and the doctor orders all of them to stay back. The trio watch as the astronaut reaches out its arm and shoots the doctor with an energy weapon. As the doctor begins to regenerate, he is shot once again. The companions run to him, and River shoots at the astronaut, who returns to the lake. There is no sign of life in the doctor, and the mystery man confirms that he is dead. Using a can of gasoline that he had brought, they burn the Time Lord's body on a boat in the lake. The man reveals that he has the same blue envelope, but numbered 4, and introduces himself as Canton Everett Delaware III. As he leaves, he says that he will not see them again. River realizes the envelopes are numbered and wonders who got number 1.
That shot of...
Who got number 1?
That shot of them watching the boat burn. Mm-hmm. Is amazing with the sunset and the 4 of them all in a row. I mean, you could just see the just like, we got it. Right. But I feel so bad for Arthur because he was the one standing in the water the whole time. It must have been freezing.
I think they had that production-wise, they had to shoot that at sunrise.
Oh, really?
I think because the way that those cliffs are situated, the sunset would be, you wouldn't see the sun. Mm-hmm. So I remember reading that, or I think that was the commentary that they said that. But it
really was a great shot. Yeah. It was a great look.
The doctor has a great line here right before everything happens. Human beings, I thought I'd never get done saving you. I just really like the way he says that, as opposed to Matt Smith's first season where he's like, he's yelling at how stupid humans are, where now he's like, this is the doctor I know.
So it's obvious right away that something bad is going to happen and that he knows about it. I'm sure this is not something I caught the first time I watched this. Almost a throwaway line. And it's surrounded by humor. I think he had just spit out the wine.
That's good. That's right, yeah. That's continuity. He still doesn't like wine. Yeah. We didn't get to see that evacuation like in, was it The Lodger? Where he just spits it out directly.
Yeah, it was The Lodger.
Oh, wow. I thought you were thinking Eccleston.
Into
Eccleston.
The glass, yeah. Where he's like,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. But then also Eccleston.
Eccleston does it too in World War III.
In the cabinet room in 10 Downing.
Yeah, I forgot about the other one. I always think of Eccleston. Yeah.
So it's very unexpected when it comes. Then, of course, he walks over to the astronaut and the astronaut shoots him. But, of course, upon second viewing, I did notice it.
But he also mentions that 1969, so many things happened that people don't know about, which I thought was an interesting thing. And also because he and Martha are stuck in 1969 because of the Weeping Angels.
In the Blink episode.
Oh, wow.
So there is a lot more going on in 1969.
It's funny because now that I think about that, I'm like, why didn't River go and find the other doctor?
We'll never know.
Anyway, we're kind of not addressing the way that the doctor gets shot. Mm. I love the way that that impact happens with, like, what's going on? What is the? It seems like the astronaut coming out of the lake is going to give him a message and not shoot him.
Well, when the astronaut raises its hand, there's no gun. It's just the hand.
Yeah. Right.
So you don't see that as a threat at this point.
And there's also a long moment of silence. before the shoot happens. So there's no music, there's no nothing. It's, you know, I think there's one moment where one of them says, "What is that?" But it's all very silent. And then that the sound effect of the shot is very powerful.
Yeah, and the way it's done, I don't know if they had like a cable at the back of Matt Smith, because it looks like he really got shot. And I thought that that was great, that maybe they just digitally removed the cable to make that impact.
I thought he just fell. I thought he was good at that.
Because, I mean, if you do what you're saying, Frank, like you kind of, you see the, like when you hop, you kind of see it. And maybe it's good editing that I didn't see that. You know what I mean? So that's why I think it's a cable.
But speaking about the editing, it looked like he got shot twice.
Yes.
Before falling. Mm. But when you look at it again, because we were trying to figure out if it was once or twice, he gets shot and falls all the way to the ground. They start running in with a different, they start running towards him. They cut back to him and he's standing up again and gets shot and does the same fall. So it's like they did that, I guess, just for dramatic impact to show the doctor.
Yeah, and it's so quick and you're reacting to what's happening that at least I never noticed it until Eugene pointed it out this morning, and now I will never not see it.
You're welcome. But then the second shot, it has that shockwave emanating from the impact. And I love the way that that looks, because it keeps going beyond the lake. It doesn't go onto the shore. And I like that effect.
The one where it stops the regeneration.
Yes, that one.
When we first saw it, you know, that's just, no. I mean, it was such a shock to see that during a regeneration and it stops.
Yeah, because you go, he's just going to regenerate. He'll be fine. We're going to get a new doctor. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh no.
Wait a minute, what is going on?
Yeah, it was good.
I kind of wish sometime in the future we could actually get a regeneration like that, where the doctor is mortally wounded very quickly and regenerates right then and there. No time to prepare, no time to drag it out. Just get in the TARDIS. It would just be kind of cool, where it's just like all of a sudden, boom, new doctor.
And I think the BBC today could do that. I mean, they've been doing some really secretive episodes. You know, stuff hasn't leaked. No spoilers, but there's been some amazing guest stars and everything on the current season. So I think if there was a time, the BBC could do that today. And I think people would buy it. Like, oh my goodness, this doctor is now regenerating with no fanfare, no preparing the audience for this new person to be the doctor. That would be exciting.
People would get so mad.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it needs to happen the next regeneration, but it is good to keep in the back pocket.
Yeah. Now, we've seen how great of a shot River is with the Stetson and in other episodes as well, but shooting that off his head. And she keeps missing the astronaut. Or the astronaut just keeps going into the water and doesn't have any effect of being shot.
She's in shock. And
I just think that's interesting, as other people who have watched other episodes are.
I also find it funny that she's not shooting that gun the way, the more efficient way you would.
Yeah, even I noticed that.
Yeah, yeah. And but I'm like, it's for the effect, the emotion going through her that she can't function.
Right.
That's how I'm going to explain it away.
I do like it when she pulls.
How is she shooting the gun?
Yeah, for those of us that aren't.
It's one at a time. She pulls the hammer back, fires, pulls the hammer back, fires. So in that type of gun, a single action army, you hold the trigger down and you can fan it. So you can shoot it faster.
Although I did notice that when she pulls the hammer, the trigger goes closer back in, like you told me it would.
Yep.
Eugene teaches me about guns.
I have a replica.
I know we already mentioned it, but yeah, the whole Viking funeral for the doctor, again, just is a great, leading us emotionally into this place of that we don't normally get with Doctor Who, where we think the doctor is really, really gone, and what's going to happen next.
It's very final.
Yeah.
And I like the line here that River gives, a Time Lord's body is a miracle, regardless if it's alive or dead. I'm like, you can't give that into the wrong people. So I love that they have to burn the body.
Mm-hmm.
I also like the line that River tells them when they look at her after the doctor dies and is dead. And they're like, what do we do now? What do we do next? And River says, what we always do, what the friends of the doctor always do, as they're told. And I think that line sets a new rule, you know, that we see later on and in other episodes that, the friends of the doctor, they do what the doctor tells them to do. I think a lot of Moffat's writing includes these rules. Where was this? Where was this filmed? Like Lake Silencio? Was it in America?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The several scenes on the roadway were filmed on Route 163, and then Lake Powell was Lake Silencio. I think that's in Utah.
I like that they went to America.
It was a big deal. They were promoting that quite a lot before the season started. Because I think it's the very first time they shoot in America.
I mean, we've gone to America, but on location America, yes, I think
it's
the first time.
Yeah, I mean, actually physically filming in...
Yeah.
Because they've gone to European places, and I think even they've gone to Morocco.
And the Eighth Doctor of the movie was in Canada, right?
For San Francisco.
Supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The part would be played by
Do we count that? But yeah.
And then Daleks in Manhattan was in Manhattan, but they filmed in England.
Oh, yeah.
And also, we should note that the Doctor, during the scene before he gets shot, says he's 1103.
Mm-hmm. They go back to the diner where Amy is very upset that River isn't mourning the Doctor's death. She is fixated on trying to figure out who received the number one envelope. Rory notices that the number one envelope is on a nearby table. Just then, the Doctor comes out of the restroom. In shock, River slaps him and says it's for something that he hasn't done yet. They ask his age, and he replies 909, which is 200 years younger than the Doctor who was at the lake. The Doctor is curious about the envelopes, and River tells him that they've all been recruited to deal with something having to do with space in 1969 and a man called Canton Everett Delaware III. I love River's line. This is cold, even for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's great. And he has no clue what she's talking about.
He went back to get a straw. It makes it more fizzy. And then I like how Rory goes, is this the Doctor? And then pokes him.
Yes.
It's the same way.
Yes, he did in Pandarica Opens.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Sorry. I love that.
It was funny.
It is. It's very funny.
No, just they all played shocked well.
Yeah.
Not overboard, not dramatic, just really lost in what is going on.
Yeah, I think it's timed well with how an audience member would go through that. Like, and as an audience member, you're given time to go, huh? Without missing key important plot information.
And I think this is the first time we're in an American diner, live action. Just want to point that out.
But it won't be the last.
It will not. That's why I point it out now. I think here Amy asks the Doctor if he's okay. He goes, I'm the king of okay. Yeah. And I like that response as opposed to I'm always all right.
Well, and then right away he realizes that king of okay doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
I really like the whole time traveler's wife aspect of River and the Doctor have this relationship and they're going separate ways. So for River, I don't know if it's more shocking that she has witnessed the Doctor dying, because her past is already his future. Mm-hmm. So she's already lived with a Doctor that would have been older.
Older, yes. Yes.
Well, remember that they had just sat at the diner table and going, do you remember Jed the Fish?
Jim the Fish.
Jim the Fish.
Easter Island.
Jim the Fish and then...
Easter Island. Well, they must really have liked you. Look at their stuff.
So, which is actually, I remember the first time watching the episode going, wow, they've done all that stuff? That's kind of weird. But it is like for her later. Okay. She realizes that it is later. Because Frank and I were talking about it, and this is where they begin to establish that we're traveling in opposite times. But I still don't think, but
it's probably not
all
hard
the
and fast. It's still
wibbly wobbly.
But just the idea that this unexpected event happened that River, I don't think she knew that this was going to happen.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I mean, I haven't rewatched many later ones.
Switching back to production, I like that when the Doctor comes out of, I guess that's the closet.
No, it was the bathroom.
It's the bathroom. But I do like that once he opens that door with the straw, you can see the TARDIS in the back.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. They did not need to do that, but I love that they did.
They had the TARDIS all over the place in this episode.
They did.
They board the TARDIS, and the Doctor wonders why everyone is upset with him. The others decide that they cannot tell the Doctor about his future death, but the Doctor still knows they are hiding something. He decides not to travel anywhere until Amy tells him that he just has to trust her. She swears on something important to just the two of them, fish fingers and custard. They travel to Washington, D.C. in 1969 to find Canton. The Doctor cloaks the TARDIS and it materializes inside the Oval Office.
And quietly.
River was driving.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the plot just breaks down just a little bit for me, because I don't buy that the Doctor is that oblivious about what is happening. Like, I feel like the Doctor would know. And then River even asks him, it's someone that the person who sent it is someone that you trust more than anybody. Like, I don't know. I just kind of feel like the Doctor would know at that point. But
I might agree with you, except this is a River episode. River would do that.
River would know.
No, River would send it.
River would be the one organizing all this. The Doctor I don't think the Doctor in this would necessarily jump to it's a future incarnation of himself, because I think he's like, well, it could be River, because River does things like this.
And it could be a trap from someone else, and that's why he wants to know what's going on.
Yeah.
He knows and, he thinks just himself, because he did follow other anonymous letters back with New Earth, and the face of Bo sent him that. And he's like, okay, let's just follow it. Let's see where it goes. But this one, there's something really different about it, and he can't quite peg it down. And I don't know if it's really an explanation, but it's just our point of view or how we see it.
And in another script, you could have the Doctor figuring it out, and that wouldn't be a stretch either, you know? It's like, whatever fits the plot, and that's a great scene, you know, when he sits down. I mean, yeah, he is arrogant, but it is also just kind of like, I'm not kind of used to this, so you really need to tell me what's happening.
But it's interesting to see him on the other side. It's like, everybody always has to trust you and go along with whatever you say. And at this point, it's like, no, this is something important. We're telling you to trust us. And he just turns on River.
Yeah, he does not trust River. He just does not trust her.
But he's testing her during the whole time when they're leaving. And he's hitting all the controls and she's going around and fixing it. And goes, what did you just do? Nothing. Everything's fine. To me, he's testing her. How much does she actually know?
Oh.
She knows how to fix all this stuff. Because later on, he's like, River, did you get that working yet?
Right.
You know? So to me, that was him just going, she knows her way around here. She knows a lot more than I thought she first did. You know, to me, that was just him testing to find out where she's at in this whole timeline, knowing that comes from his future.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
Again, that's just my way of looking at it.
Yeah, no, but I think you're right.
I like it.
I think you're absolutely right on that.
Something that I had mentioned that we've been missing in some of the newer episodes, like quick, witty, to the point, and answers like three questions with one piece of dialogue.
But you really, this one you can hear and understand and go along with it easier. For that one, it's, for me and Ryan, mm-hmm. it's a little bit more difficult to understand the first time around.
Yeah. Well, and you don't have the same character dynamics. The Doctor and River
right.
are able to build off of each other, like in ways that the current Doctor isn't
the
able
flirty.
To do. Yeah, with any of her companions.
This also has a little line, but I always find it really funny when they're going to go search. I think it's after they go, he agrees to help them. And he says, all right, let's go search for Canton Everett Delaware III. I mean, how many people could there be with that name? Well, three.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was especially funny for Auburn, who is a third.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know you were a third.
Yeah.
Was that why you go by Auburn?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, partly. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Should we call you Trip from now on? Did you ever have that as a nickname?
No, no.
Okay.
I asked. A long time ago.
That's like, okay, I typed something there that I shouldn't have. Okay.
Oh, I was also like all the role reversals that we're seeing in this episode. I think you already mentioned like River being more of a doctor, like knowing more about the TARDIS. I like at the top of this paragraph when the Doctor asks Rory if everyone's cross at him, and Rory just slinks away. I'll go find out. Like, usually it's, you know, other, or at least what we've seen is other people coming to the Doctor for that emotional support and the Doctor not being able to give it. Where this, like, the Doctor is looking for like some emotional answers.
Well, when they're under the console and it's Amy, the one going, who cares? We're just going to fix this.
Yeah.
And it's River saying, no, we've got to play by the rules. And then the Doctor puts his head down. He's like, I'm being really smart up here.
And nobody, you know, here to see it?
Yeah. And it's
what's
just
the point of you all?
He is really, really out of his element and he just can't stand it, which is, I think, perfect, because even when he's confronting a mystery that he doesn't understand, he still feels like, I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And now he has absolutely no idea what's going on. I mean, he just went to get his fizzy straw.
And then he comes back and all his people are looking cross at him. I do like that now that we're talking about it, the reversal where I think this Doctor, now it's a younger Doctor, is not the smartest one in the room anymore. It's now like River, Amy, and Rory.
Yeah.
Because they know something that they don't know if they want to tell him. I really like
they
that.
Can tell him.
Right.
And I think that's why I like the idea that he's testing River. Because like you, I said, no, Doctor's smarter than that. I want a smarter Doctor. So I'm giving him that. No, he's testing River. That's what he's doing while doing this.
Yeah, and it takes the River-Doctor dynamic. Before they're allies, now they're like, I don't know if I can trust you. And then you'll see it play out more in comedy because I have it written down for later. I like it.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way until we come up to it.
And I did think the fish fingers and custard was a very sweet moment. I'm glad they went there for how to prove that Amy was telling the truth. He should believe her. And I just thought it was a great moment to add that in. I really liked it.
But can someone break it down for me? Like, why would that be the Why would that be the thing that makes the doctor be like, okay, I'm going to trust you no matter what?
Because that's when she was trying to trust him when they first met. And it was the one food after trying all the stuff that worked. That's what he liked. And it's like, okay, who would have ever thought it'd be this? And it was just a special moment between the two that she goes, no, swear on something important. That's the moment we connected when we first met.
That's when we bonded. President Nixon and Canton are listening to a phone call the president received from a scared little girl asking for his help. Nixon tells Canton that he receives a call from the child every day on his private line. The doctor leaves the TARDIS and hears the recording where the girl says she is scared of the spaceman and gives her location, or her name, as Jefferson Adams Hamilton, and then hangs up. Nixon and Canton see the doctor standing there taking notes and immediately call security. River decloaks the TARDIS while the guards tackle the doctor.
When the doctor shows up in the Oval Office, he says he thinks he's in the oblong room. I laughed out loud. Something about... I knew he was going to make a joke about a shape. I knew it, but oblong was not the shape that came to my head first. One of the reasons I really love Matt Smith. I have no idea if this was actually written in the script or ad-libbed, but whoever was responsible for the word oblong, thank you. Thank you for that.
When the doctor is quietly taking notes, it is brilliant comedic acting from Matt Smith. Yeah. The way he mouths, like, do this quietly kind of thing. And then he starts taking notes very quietly. And then they look and they see him.
They stop talking.
And then he's like, carry on.
Yes, that hand wave was perfect. Continue.
That bit of comedy is brilliant by Moffat. I love it.
And then when he's trying to get away and he runs into the TARDIS, you just cut to River. Every time.
Yeah, I agree with you, Eugene, with the brilliance on Moffat's part. I think all our characters in this episode are given such good character development moments that are unique to their characters. And it's just, it's brilliant. It's so good at just immediately, like, letting you know who everyone is and where they're all coming from. They're all coming from different places.
I'm smiling and nodding.
Yeah.
It's like we're smiling and nodding. Like, continue. This is good. We agree.
Because I'm thinking... saying, yeah, especially in that moment when, oh, what are you going to do? Shoot me. They're Americans! Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry,
don't shoot me.
It's just, that was a clever little...
And immediately setting up Canton's character when Nixon calls him and tells Canton, you are my second choice for this assignment. Right.
And Canton responds,
you are my second, it's okay, you are my second choice for president. Like, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, that's two lines, but it says everything about the character. I found myself taking notes for this episode and just writing down pieces of dialogue more than anything else, because they're all on point. They're all really good, crisp. Like, they say so much in such a short amount of time.
It's like, why do you want me? I was fired. Oh, we need somebody on the outside. Another two lines that quickly tell you what's up with Canton.
Yeah.
So one criticism I have in this is that...
Sorry.
When Canton's at the bar, there's an African-American FBI person.
Yes.
I would not have seen that to be the case in this time.
At all.
Especially to get another white man. I don't see that at all happening.
Well, also, African-American man is in charge of security.
That's
in the
second
White
House. One I was going to go in.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I understand what they're doing. Like,
it's great.
Yes, it is great.
I'm really glad they did it.
For like an apologistic revisionist point of view.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's American stuff that's us.
Well, and Nixon wasn't known.
And Nixon, that's the other thing. And I was going to say that the African-American Secret Service agent has the most lines.
He's Mr. Peterson.
That wouldn't happen in this administration.
Yeah, just wouldn't.
Didn't mean to bring that down, but I just wanted to point that out.
No, that's a good point.
But that is the power of stories, not to rehabilitate Nixon's reputation, but to show a modern audience that, you know, just because history wasn't representative of what you wanted to be today, that you can still do that. Like, I hope there are people that watch this episode and, you know, that have no idea. I'm sure most of the British public has no idea, especially the kids that this is geared for, have no idea of Nixon's, like, legacy besides Watergate, mm-hmm. Or the Vietnam War, which they mentioned. But hopefully that this like served to show somebody that they could be a police officer next to the president. Like,
yeah.
Not that it would be better if they show them being president, but you know, it's good to show the public that you don't have to let society limit you. And so that's why, like, maybe it's not historically accurate, I think there's enough of that kind of belief that we have to show historically accurate things that whitewashes a lot of history, that this I noted it, mm-hmm. but it didn't bother me because I knew that the audience it was reaching was a modern audience.
Yeah, and I mean, the show isn't for historical accuracy. It's for fun.
Yeah.
So I get why they did it, but me as an American and this particular time right now, it stuck out to me.
No, I think it needs noted, for sure.
But I agree with everything you said.
But it sticks out and is worth noting for good reason.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, because you know, I'm really glad they did it. Mm-hmm. For, you know, first time watching this, it was like, that was a bold choice. And then it was like, well, maybe it's not a bold choice. Who cares? So,
yeah.
And there is that one moment when they're in the TARDIS and who's president now? Nixon. Nixon's president. And they banter. And then she says, well, he did some good things too. Well, not enough. Hippie.
Yeah, so again, that goes to the fun of the show instead of the historical accuracy.
Yeah. The person who played Nixon, I think, did a great job. And I think they also did a really great job on his makeup. It's funny that it's not an American production. It's a British production, and they seem to get Nixon more accurately than some American productions, perhaps. I actually watched this with my parents, who are conservative Republicans, and they loved Nixon in this episode. And they even noted that he looked and acted more like the Nixon they remembered than other productions that star Nixon.
So now you bring him up, President Richard Nixon is played by Stuart Milligan, who is from Boston.
Hmm. Oh, so it's an American
actor.
It's
an American.
All right.
And we have seen him before as Colonel Stark in the animated Dreamland.
So we haven't really seen him.
But he does a lot of voiceover stuff, a lot of anime voiceover. You can look up his IMDb credit. It's very vast. And he also voiced Tanoi in the Sarah Jane Adventures, Warriors of Kudlak. That's in the first season, I believe.
Going back a bit to the dialogue, Amy, you know, tells River while they're in the TARDIS, the doctor said the scanners won't work, and that's why the doctor had to leave to go outside to see what's going on. And didn't she just say bless? You know, the whole bless him kind of thing. And she's getting the scanners to work. And then when they tackle the doctor, River, did you get the scanners working?
So yeah. It's like, of course.
That's why I was like, oh, he is testing her. He was thinking that. And then make her blow again so you can see everything.
Oh, I love that. That distraction. And then there was like, and then he slinks away into the desk. I can just imagine him like crawling quietly. Yeah.
Later, the doctor is sitting at the president's desk with the guards pointing their guns at him. River, Rory, and Amy come out of the TARDIS, and the doctor says they are on loan from Scotland Yard to help with the scared girl's phone calls. He is combing over maps of Florida for a clue to her location when Amy sees a large-headed alien in the doorway. She remembers him from the lake, but when Rory blocks her view, she forgets about it again. She feels sick and is escorted to the restroom.
Before we get to that, I want to give this great line of comedy. As he mentions they're from Scotland Yard to the Secret Service, the doctor... I'm your new undercover agent on loan from Scotland Yard, codenamed The Doctor. These are my top operatives, the legs, the nose, and Mrs. Robinson.
I hate you.
No, you don't.
I didn't watch this episode with subtitles, so I had to rewind a couple of lines because sometimes it is hard for me to understand what they're saying. But I cracked up. I had to rewind it. And then River does not like being called Mrs. Robinson, or so she says, but the doctor thinks she really does. There's a lot of kind of sexual jokes. I guess River and the doctor always have kind of sexy jokes, but I felt like there was a lot in this episode in particular.
The way River says I hate you is so perfect.
Yeah. Going from something like the funeral scene where it was outside, big, you had those really nice compositions of our characters watching that, to this Oval Office, which is now, you know, even though the set might be larger, it's a more cramped space, it's inside, but you still don't lose any of that geography and, you know, that the director is responsible for in helping the audience to know what things are happening where. So, props to the director.
And cinematographer. I mean, it seems like they spent the money.
Yeah.
It's like, we're making this look good.
Yeah.
We're going to do that. We're going all the way to America. We're going to make this one look good. And you get to really like Canton here. because he picks up on everything.
Oh, yeah. The character development of Canton, even, you know, the first time we see him in 69, right. they developed his character really well, very quickly, too. This guy gets it. He knows what he's doing. He's, you know, even though he was fired.
Interaction with the doctor was great and saying, you know, Mr. President, this guy got in with a big box and three of his friends, and this is the guy he got past. One of them's worth listening to.
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, this guy's good, and I'll shoot him myself. So it's like, okay, kind of good.
Yeah. That was great. Oh, not so great.
We didn't mention that old Canton and young Canton are father and son.
I was going to save that for the end.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Ruining. We'll cut it out. No, we can mention now.
I was actually thinking that.
Yep. Morgan Shepherd, who's been in everything, and Mark Shepherd, who's been in everything.
So Mark Shepherd plays young Canton. He's we've seen him previously from Supernatural as Crowley, Romo Lampkin from Battlestar Galactica, the new one, Anthony Athros from The New Bionic Woman, Ivan Erwick from 24, season 5. He is Lucan from Star Trek Voyager, the episode Child's Play. And he was in The X-Files, season 1, episode Fire. And he was in Mantis, if you remember that old show from the 90s, and Sliders. So he's been kind of a staple in sci-fi.
Wasn't he in Firefly?
Yes, he was Badger.
Badger.
Yeah. Badger.
Who was he in Battlestar?
He was a lawyer.
Yeah, he was Baltar's lawyer and later became president. Have
the
you watched the whole series? Spoilers!
No, I have, but it's
yeah,
been a long
when everybody else is either in prison, dying, or gonna go off on a suicidal mission, he becomes the president. And it's basically like, yeah, you're president now. Moving on.
So. Oh, and for a brief couple of years, maybe, he was the voice of BBC America. Here's that voice that says, up next on BBC America.
Oh, we love that voice.
We do love that voice.
It was that voice.
Or no.
The Doctor will return.
But was that from BBC America or was that from BBC?
And then old Canton is played by William Morgan Shepherd, who passed away last year in January 2019. He played Blank Reg in Max Headroom, Dr. Ira Graves in Star Trek The Next Generation, The Schizoid Man, the Klingon Commander in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. How are you going to say this in Voyager, Brian? Katai?
I think so, yeah.
Katai from Star Trek Voyager, the episode Bliss.
Bad episode.
He was the Vulcan Science Minister in Star Trek, the 2009 movie. He was Gushi the Miner in Quantum Leap Mirror Image, which is the last episode of the series. He played the Professor in Sequest 2032. He was a Warlord Jistan in The Long Twilight Struggle.
Oh, yeah, all right. That's right. He was okay, yeah, Jistan.
Jistan?
Yeah.
Oh, I said it right, okay. He was Warlord Jistan from Babylon 5 in the episode The Long Twilight Struggle, and a separate character, the Soul Hunter, in the episode Soul Hunter. And he's done a lot of animated voice work. The Legend of Prince Valiant, that's just a really good series that nobody talks about. And then in the Iron Man series in the 90s, he was Dum Dum Dugan. I don't know if anybody remembers who that character is, but he was played by Neil McDonough in the Captain America the First Avenger movie. He was the one with the bowler for hat.
Okay. Take
your word for it.
And then in Biker Mice from Mars, he played the main bad guy, Lawrence Limburger. And then in Gargoyles, Disney's Gargoyles, he played Odin and some other character voices for the series. And he was also a voice in Afro Samurai and Young Justice.
And he was always old. When he was Data's grandfather, it was like, almost 25 years before Star Trek 2009. And it was like, how are you still able to go under prosthetics? It's just, it was always old.
And I remember running into him when I was on the Fox lot. Very nice man. I recognized him, and then but I had that look of like, I recognize you, but I'm like nodding that I recognize you as opposed to nodding that I know you. But he kind of saw that and was like, nodded back at me.
Oh my gosh, that's the same thing he did with the doctor at the beginning of this episode. You had that doctor moment with him.
But I didn't have a wave.
Plus, best voice in the world.
Yeah,
there's so much in that gravelly voice. It's fantastic.
Next to Tony J and David Warner, like Morgan Shepherd is up there.
It's funny that with just his acting voice, and he went home and he always talked to falsetto.
And he's talking to the little Canton, go get your roommate up.
They're both very, very good character actors.
Yes.
Very good character actors.
So they got Mark Shepard casted as young Canton, and they couldn't figure out who to get for older Canton. And then I think it was just somebody in production just looked up his dad and go, hey, we can get his dad. So that's how they couldn't figure out somebody else, and then they got his dad. So it all worked out.
An alien is waiting in the restroom, and Amy remembers him again. Another woman comes out of a stall and thinks he's a coworker with a Star Trek mask. She turns to Amy and immediately forgets the alien, who then kills the woman with electricity. Amy needs to tell the doctor. She takes a picture of it with her phone and runs. In the hall, she forgets what happened and is escorted back to the Oval Office. The doctor finds the little girl's location on the map using the name she had given. The girl calls again, screaming that the spaceman is there and he's going to eat her. The doctor and the others enter the TARDIS along with Canton to go and save her. You won't find three streets with those names anywhere else in the country. Hamilton, Adams, and Jefferson. Which is a bit on the nose, by the way.
For real? That wasn't just written for the show?
That was written for the show. Oh. Yeah, that's why I'm saying it's kind of on the nose. It's like,
but they did limit their search to around...
Florida, around NASA.
Yeah, around NASA.
Yeah, but it still is awfully convenient that she could look out the window and see three street signs, and they're all president names.
Well, we see it later, so it must be real.
I want to know why Ben is in the girls' bathroom. That Ben in the ladies' bathroom. Oh, Ben, is that you?
He's such a prankster.
It's common knowledge that Ben goes into the ladies' bathroom.
He's a prankster.
But it is the White House. Like, you would think there would be a little more... but whatever.
It just was a funny way of having her calmly be in the situation.
That was so sad. Like, I think Joy's death was also a surprise. Like, maybe not sad is the right word, just surprising.
It was shocking.
But it
was sad because...
It had to happen, though, for us to be there.
Be even more scared of the silence.
Like, they had the to...
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, I agree.
But it's sad because it didn't have any meaning.
Yeah.
It was just, I'm getting rid of her, and... just killing a bug kind of attitude. Nothing important. And that's what makes it so much more sad.
And then when he says, Joy was her name. I'm like, ugh.
Well, that was the great, you know, double writing he always does about answering the question, Joy.
The special effects on that one death were amazing. I was like, you didn't have to do that.
And the ashes to ashes, dust to dust kind of idea.
And I think we discussed this in our Gallifrey 1 episode, but that was not an actor in the suit. It was just they couldn't find someone tall enough, and they went out to a local bar and...
They went out to the local college.
College.
And then they went...
bar, college.
And then they went to the medical part of the college, and then they were running into these tall people. They're like, I got an exam to go to. I got an exam to go to. So the guy goes, let's go to the sports area of the college. And then that's where he got the non-actor guy.
Yeah. And he was like 6'7". It's like, hey, do you want to be on Doctor Who?
He's like, sure.
Oh, sure. And then they liked him so much, he did a bunch of aliens. They were like, yeah, he's doing really good in this. Because they are creepy.
But all the masks and prosthetics, I thought, were done really well. It was really great how they were able to do it.
Even when they add the mouth, which I think is probably
digital,
it still looks really good combined with the practical mask.
And they said they were heavy, that and the arms. So it's just like it's a workout just being there and standing.
I really like the creepiness of the sunken eyes.
Yeah.
They look like caves under those.
But they are skeletal, but they still do have eyes. And again, because of the Buffy, I keep thinking of the gentleman. They're very similar.
Yeah.
In the very tall, skinny skeletal with the suits.
If they were in America, it would have been Doug Jones playing the Silence.
Yes.
It says here that the Silence were inspired by the impermanence and unreliability of memory. Visually, they were inspired by Edward Munch's painting, The Scream.
Which I also like that the whole mythology behind the flying saucer UFO and those aliens are similar to this. You know, so how they're telling us that we remember slightly about it and we've written it into our own lore somehow.
Spielberg made a movie about them.
Right. But I just like that generic look of what they kind of look like. But these look really a lot more frightening than what we've seen. I have that idea of what the alien looked like. So I did like that they went off of that.
Yeah, what I like about the Silence is that it's a creature that you forget exists once you're not looking at it anymore. Like, that's such a scary idea. And I like how we learned that. I like that we're with Amy and she's reasoning that out loud as she's witnessing Joy see the monster, then turn and be like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? Turn, see the monster, and turn away and forget.
Right.
There's another great line of dialogue in this when they're running into the TARDIS, and the doctor says, Canton, on no account follow me into the box and close the door behind you.
Yeah.
They arrive in a warehouse containing advanced space technology. River and Amy discuss trying to stop the alien now so it can not kill the doctor later. They find tendrils, cables, leading to a sewer grate, and River goes down to investigate. She sees a den of aliens. She turns to run and forgets them. She reports that there is nothing down there, but still wants to investigate the tunnels further. The doctor sends Rory with her, and they both discover a locked hatch. River cracks it open, and they find an alien hub with multiple consoles. They also find that the tunnels run all over the Earth and have been around for centuries. The aliens arrive, and River cries out to Rory.
Such a great scene with River and Rory when she's explaining.
She does it well. She's good.
When she's explaining her relationship with the doctor.
Yeah, and you know, it's well, I love when she says, you know, imagine a man drops out of the sky knowing all about you, and then it gets heartbreaking when she says, I just know there's going to come a day when he'll look at me and not know who I am.
I have that all. Oh, do you want to read it?
When I first met the doctor a long, long time ago, he knew all about me. Think about that. Impressionable young girl, and suddenly this man just drops out of the sky, and he's clever and mad and wonderful and knows every last thing about her. Imagine what that does to a girl. Rory, I don't really have to. River Song. Trouble is, it's all back to front. My past is his future. We're traveling in opposite directions. Every time we meet, I know more. He knows me less. I live for the days when I see him, but I know that every time I do, he'll be one step further away. And the day is coming when I'll look into that man's eyes, my doctor, and he won't have the faintest idea who I am, and I think it's gonna kill me. Dun dun dun.
And we've seen that, and that's what's
cool. So we can talk about that.
And that's what's cool about this scene, and the dialogue is like, as a viewer, you're like, oh, I've seen that. And then we know that at the end of that episode, River does die.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning of this episode, she was saying that, you know, what concerns her most is that there's a day coming for her that's worse than the doctor's death that they just had, than her own death. And that's this. It's like when he won't know her anymore.
Yeah, and I like that that's answered, because there's so much in this episode, so many questions in this episode that don't get answered in this episode, and it was nice to have River set this question for us, and then the next episode, it's answered. Or...
It's in the... Is it within the same... Yeah.
We're still in part...
Yeah.
Still, okay. yeah, where she sets up this question, you know, and then it's answered in this within the same episode.
Except I'm with Allburn going, yeah, but you're literally not going completely opposite ways in time. It still jumps around.
Yeah.
It's just, no. Every time you see the doctor, he doesn't necessarily... It's not, you know, every time you see the doctor, it's not just one more visit earlier for him and later for you. It's not so linear.
I think from her point of view, you know, it's happened enough where the doctor knows her less.
Yes.
So she feels that.
Yes.
So it's not meant to be literal. We can point to things. But why did she say that? Because at this moment when she's doing it, she just met one doctor and then the younger one 200 years
different. Right. She just met a doctor who had had all these adventures with her and then met his 200 younger year old self that knew none of those adventures.
Right. And knowing that one day she is going to meet him for his first time, which is going to be devastating for her. That's how she feels right now. That's how she's feeling it's progressing. Not going to be linear that way, but you know, for more often than not, there's going to be a time that's coming up that's going to be his first time, and that's going to kill her.
So in this area, I have two quotes, or two, I guess, just things that I liked. As River is descending into the sewer, the doctor says, "Be careful." River replies with, "Careful? Tried that once. Ever so dull. Shout if you get into trouble. Don't worry, I'm quite the screamer." Now there's a spoiler for you.
Oh yeah. I mean, the joke in this episode where she says, "I'm quite the screamer." Now there's a spoiler for you. That joke is probably more blatant and inappropriate than any I've heard on this show. Which of course I love, because that's the kind of sense of humor I have. But this is a kid's show, so hopefully... No kids can figure out what the hell she's talking about. The doctor's face when she says it is pretty priceless. I enjoy that a lot.
And then immediately Canton is like, what's going on? And then there's like, oh, we're just friends. And then Rory's like, I think he means about the alien invasion.
Yes. It's just like a weird so 1-2 funny. Punch yeah. That's just like comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just makes me laugh that Rory is the one telling the doctor things. He's like, I think he meant about the situation.
Yeah. Well, that's that also, what I like about Rory.
Yeah, he's a practical one. Like the doctor seems wrapped up in his own thing sometimes. And it's like, no, there are other things going on. on in this world.
I did like his comment where he's like, why do I have to be the one to explain it? Right. You're the newest.
He's like, okay. I think he hangs his head.
He does, yeah. I can't argue that.
Back to Rory, like, even when the doctor tells him to go with River.
He's like, I'd rather not.
Yeah.
No,
and,
thank you.
And then he says, then that would mean more to me.
Yeah. I would appreciate all the more than I appreciated all the more.
So the piece of trivia here, or like, I guess Easter egg, is that when Canton leaves the TARDIS, the doctor remarks to him, Brave Heart Canton, which is a reference to the fifth doctor when he always says, Brave Heart Tegan.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, yes. Right.
And so we've done two of those, so now we know where that comes from.
Oh.
I did not get that before.
Me neither.
The ship that River and Rory find themselves in looks familiar.
And Josh wanted me to bring that up, so I'm glad you brought it up. That is the same thing that we've seen in the Lodger episode, the attempted TARDIS.
And thank you for also bringing up earlier, the tasting of the wine was also a Lodger reference. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get that first one, but it was good to hear that there's more of this coming up in the show.
Yeah, I like the scare factor of what is happening. Again, these aliens, it is, the silence are so creepy because they're oblivious to how much danger they're in.
The part that really gets me is when they hear the sounds and then Rory checked that out. He goes, we're fine. I was like, that is so terrifying to be like, 1 minute I see this like an alien horde coming at me, and then I turn around, oh, we're fine.
And great acting chops to do
that. Yeah.
I was conflicted with emotions because at one point it's funny, but then at another point it's terrifying. Yeah. So I was like, how did you do that? You balance it so well.
It was terrifying. It was funny. It's one thing that bugs me a bit, that they didn't scream. They didn't do anything at that time. Get here now! While you're looking at them, but I can understand turning and you forget it's that quick. One of them at the time, River, you know, when he's, but that's, and then what? Everything's clear. You know, to do just a little bit of, there is a panic.
I think it's similar. Like, I've run across wild animals, and like, I think your first reaction is you stop and stay quiet, because even if they see you, you don't want to startle them, and you back away slowly. But it is for the story to add to the creepiness as well.
Personally, I wouldn't be screaming, Doctor! I'd be just screaming.
No, I'm which not, is why I mean, we're not companions.
Yeah, because I would just be in screaming in terror. I wouldn't be saying any words, but let me tell you, the Doctor and Canton would have heard me. Amy and Canton are looking around when they hear a girl cry out for help. Canton runs to help, while Amy tries to tell the doctor something important. He brushes her aside to go find the girl, but instead finds Canton unconscious. While holding her stomach, Amy tells him it's important and has to be now, right now. She's pregnant. The astronaut in the spacesuit walks towards them and reaches out its arm. Amy takes Canton's gun and shoots the astronaut, but then sees it's the little girl inside the spacesuit. And for me, this is where everything goes wonky for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah, I do. I'd agree too.
Yeah.
But I liked how the alien lifted, or the astronaut lifted their arm up. So that was the same action as on the lake. So that's, and then it was a little girl reaching out for help instead. So that was really shocking.
And the slow-mo, what are you doing? Saving your life.
Originally, I thought when Amy was sick in the White House, it was because of morning sickness. But then River also was sick when she was down with Rory after she saw the aliens again. So maybe it is a second time thing, you know, that you get sick at. So it wasn't the pregnancy. But then I don't know why Amy's stomach was hurting, or midsection was hurting at that time.
Because she just saw the alien.
But down here, see, they don't see the alien. They run across Canton. But she's like clutching her stomach at that point, going, okay, is she in pain? Is it, she's sick?
It just comes out of nowhere.
I think that the second time is supposed to make us think that it's morning sickness or the pregnancy. Right. I mean, this is because this is a first parter.
Which is similar to the first season of Matt Smith, when they had the whole silence will fall and not knowing what that was. And that wasn't until the next season. So they've done that now for both season openers, which I think is too far to do a story arc, which has still seeds. It's like you needed to follow up with it a little bit more than what they did. But
also,
from what we had talked about, what the doctor must know is that she's pregnant, which also going, why must the doctor know that? And what he must not never know is his death, is how we had talked about it and what those answers are. Again, it is...
comes out of the blue.
Up in the air, and it's like, okay, you're putting in some kind of something, but you're not paying it off right away, and we're going to forget this.
I know they tried to throw you off by giving River the same kind of sick feeling that Amy had when she after she sees the silence. But I still, whenever I see a woman who feels sick suddenly, I don't know if it's just me or what, my brain automatically goes to she's pregnant. So there was really nobody. It wasn't fooling me.
I did like that, you know, Catton's gun's right there, so Amy takes it and she takes the action and then instantly regrets it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a great cliffhanger on this one where they weren't really in the peril that they usually are. But you know that River and Rory are down there with multiple aliens and something's going on, but they don't really focus on that like they do for a lot of cliffhangers.
So we mentioned River Song. She's played by Alex Kingston. And then we mentioned Canton, Delaware. They're played by Mark Shepard and William Morgan Shepard. And President Nixon is played by Stuart Milligan. The main silence in this episode is played by Marnix van der Borek. And he's a 6'7" trained dancer who started doing movie work. And he was the werewolf in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. He is from the Netherlands. And then Carl, who I think is the African-American Secret Service agent.
Mr. Peterson?
He is Chukwudi Iwuji, and he is also in John Wick Chapter 2. And then Phil is played by Mark Griffin, and he is another voice actor. And he is more, the one I remember him most from is Action Man. He played the Action Man in the 1995 animated series. The little girl is played by Sydney Wade, and she previously acted with Alex Kingston in Marchlands in 2011. Joy is played by Nancy Baldwin. The prisoner guard is played by Kieran O'Connor. Captain Simmons is played by Adam Napier. Matilda is played by Henrietta Clement. King Charles is played by Paul Kryptoff. And then the busboy is played by Emilio Aquino. I think this is the first time that a two-parter has been served as the opening of a season.
Except current.
This is the first time.
Oh, yeah.
There's also a prequel to this story that involves Nixon and the telephone calls. So you can look that up, I think, on YouTube. It's available. This episode was also dedicated to Elizabeth Sladen, who passed away 4 days before the episode's broadcast.
Oh, I didn't see that on the end.
Yeah, because I'll explain why. The dedication was shown before the episode on BBC One and Space, which is another channel out there, and after the episode on BBC America. The dedication was omitted from the DVD and Blu-ray releases, but due to a typographical error at the start of her acting career, it displays 1948 as her birth year when it should be 1946.
I don't think anybody would have a problem with that.
She
was 2 years younger.
Speaking of death, this episode has the doctor dying. It was also broadcast. It was broadcasted on the 23rd of April 2011. 36 years earlier, on the 23rd of April 1975, was the day that William Hartnell, the first doctor, passed away. So with the doctor changing hats in this episode, I wanted to bring this up. I think this is the best place to bring it up. Usually the doctor is called a madman in a box, and then we know the term mad as a hatter, which we associate with the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland. But the term comes from the creation or the felt hat industry, and usually fezes are made out of felt. And so to do this process in Turkey, they used camel hair for the felt material. And then it was discovered that you could speed up the felting process by soaking the material in camel urine. But then what speeds that up further is using mercury. And we know now that mercury is not good for you in large quantities. So people would walk around with fezes that were full of mercury, and that would cause them to go mad with dementia and some other common ailments of the 19th century. So I thought that that was appropriate since the doctor is a madman in a box and he likes fezes. There's your history lesson for today.
Cool.
Mm.
The Impossible Astronaut. Who is this episode good for? Or more specifically, this episode is good for who? A new viewer, a casual viewer, a fan of the show, or a diehard?
Hey guys, Josh here, recording from another time and place. I'm going to say about this episode that it's actually good for a new viewer. I think everything you love about Doctor Who is in this episode. Time travel, aliens, weird aliens, banter, there's great stuff with the companions, there's great stuff with River. I guess she's considered a companion as well, even though she is a time traveler. in her own accord. I think that it sets up a lot of questions in a mysterious way, not in an unanswered way. It's obviously a two-parter. I think there is a lot of stuff here that only people who are fans get out of it, but it's not like when, if you didn't know those things, you would miss them if you didn't know. You're missing them because you aren't aware, but you don't feel that you're missing them. I think it works on both levels in that regard. And I know if I watched this episode first out of everything, I'd be really intrigued and really entertained and want to know more.
I have not seen this episode in a long time, and I am shocked at the amount of things I did not remember. The overall, I guess the giant spoiler of the episode I remembered, but pretty much everything else was gone, which is surprising. My own mind surprises me sometimes. So obviously it has a very interesting opening with a lot of things happening. I kind of liked that. This is the first episode of the season, so it just throws you right into the deep end right away. I also was surprised when Canton walked up in the background after the doctor gets shot, because surprisingly I had no memory of Canton. And I say surprisingly because I love that character and I fell in love with him all over again. And I hope I don't forget him again. Maybe it's the silence that's making me forget, but he's got to be one of my favorite characters. That's, you know, a one-off or a mini companion, whatever we call them. But he shows up with a canister of gas and I'm like, who the hell are you? I really don't know. River says there's a far worse day coming for me. Talking about worse than her death or the doctor's death. And then very shortly after, the doctor kind of corners her and says, who are you? Who did you kill? Why are you in prison? And when you put those two lines together in your mind, and in the episode they're probably less than 5 minutes apart, it's almost like they gave away the whole thing upon first viewing. Again, probably wouldn't pick up on that, but as somebody who already knows what's going to happen, spoilers, I was like, oh man, it's so obvious upon second viewing what's going on here. I'm not super observant. There's no way I can never figure out how to solve the mystery until the mystery's over. I've just never been a good person to figure things out before they happen, and so I definitely never would have figured it out. But upon second viewing, wow, it's like so obvious. The last note I have here is that Amy goes in the bathroom and there's that really creepy scene where we really see the silence for the first time. And that actress who plays the woman who gets blown up, whose name is Joy, that scene is pretty, well, I mean, it starts off funny, but oh my God, she explodes. That is so morbid. I feel so bad for her. She was a sweet lady. Honestly, it's one of those things where I was paying attention so closely to this episode that I just didn't take a ton of notes. I was really hyper-focused because I felt almost as if I was watching it for the first time. There's definitely things I remembered about it, but overall, it was pretty crazy how little I remembered. And I swear to God, it's almost as if the silence is real. I would recommend this episode to... I can't say new who, because there's just too much going on here. I mean, the very first scene has like six different cuts in it to different things. You're just being tugged in all directions. It's confusing even if you know what's going on. So I would have to say, I don't want to say Die Hard, but I kind of do want to say that. I'm just going to say, I think you should be a fan of the show in order to watch this episode. I would not introduce someone to the show with this episode unless I wanted the Amy's Choice effect, where I would confuse the hell out of them hoping to spark interest. But I would say, nah, I wouldn't start somebody here for sure.
I'm gonna say casual. Yeah, I am. Just because there's a lot you need to absorb in a very fast time, where somebody who'd watched Doctor Who before could kind of know about that. And if you're coming off cold, you might be very confused at the end. Not impossible, but I'm just saying majority of people.
Well, like I said earlier, I watched this episode with my parents, who had a small knowledge of Doctor Who, they actually picked this episode to watch. Oh, they're in America in this one? I want to watch this one. And they loved it. It's hard to say that it would be good for a new viewer. I want to say it could be good for a new viewer because time travel is explained inside the plot where Canton, they have to explain it to Canton. But I guess this is good for casual.
I think like most of their season openers, I would call this good for a new viewer. Maybe not the best for a new viewer, but I think because it's a cliffhanger and it's a really, really strong episode, all the witty dialogue, like you said, Kelsey, the explanation of time travel, and you get not only with Amy and Rory companions that are more experienced, but you do get Canton's point of view, which is the newcomer. So for all those reasons, I'll put it in the new who viewer category.
I didn't think about that before, but I liked your analogy with Canton being your proxy if you're new. I like that. I'm going to go with fan because I liked it so much more watching it the second time after seeing everything for the season and knowing where they're going and knowing what's happening. It was better on the second viewing and subsequent viewings after that because I know what's going on. So to get the best out of it, I'm putting it in fan.
For me, I remember watching this the first time. I liked it more the first time. When I watched it the second time, I had the opposite reaction of Frank in that I kind of had to think about it too much. And so I think I'm going to have to just go with my initial reaction of a new, this is good for a new Who viewer because you're not going to ask all these questions that we're asking once we know how this plays out. And I think I'll go more into this next episode because I don't want to spoil anything. So that wraps up The Impossible Astronaut. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time when the future becomes the present.
You've just listened to an episode of Who Knew?
Our wonderful theme music is by Michael Grady.
Find him on Facebook at The Universe Explodes.
All our episodes are engineered by Auburn.
You can find him at auburnbinkley.com.
You can also find this show in several places.
Follow us on Twitter at Who Knew Podcast.
Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast.
All our episodes are on WhoKnewPodcast.com.
Visit our Facebook page.
Please leave comments, reviews, and click like to help support Who Knew Podcast.
To listen to our show on your Amazon Echo device, enable the AnyPod podcast skill. Ask AnyPod to play the Who Knew Podcast.
This podcast is inspired by Doctor Who,
the longest-running sci-fi show in history.
And especially the revival, spearheaded by Russell T. Davis.
Thanks to Russell,
Sidney Newman,
Verity Lambert,
Ron Grainer,
Delia Derbyshire,
and all those involved in the adventures of our favorite Time Lord.
Your work continues to inspire and entertain.
Who's Phil? Phil, take her to the bathroom. Is that like, that's not familiar to anybody? Go with Phil.
That's not in my notes.
Phil will take you.
That was a very nice Nixon.
A bit more, Phil, take her to the bathroom.